Brian, and welcome to BattlefieldResumes.com Leadership Podcast, where my twin brother Bruce and I are committed to building better leaders. From webcasts to webinars, podcasts to personal services, one-on-one coaching to online opportunities, remember, the key to success begins with building the leader in you. As part of the John Maxwell team, we want to live out the principles that John teaches. This is our rule of five that we seek to practice every day. To lead, to grow, to create, to excel, and to serve. Please visit us at BattlefieldResumes.com. And remember, make today count.
All right, hello. This is Brian Benedict, along with Bruce Benedict. Can you say hi to everybody, Bruce?
Hi, everyone. This is Bruce Benedict from Battlefield Resumes.
All right. We're going to go through a little bit of everyone communicates and few connect and how it relates to transitioning military. We're gonna just kind of go through this. And Bruce, if you want to elaborate on that, feel free to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Battlefield Resumes not only helps people with job searching, resume writing, interviewing, networking, but one of the main things that we really like to do is help military personnel transition their military leadership styles into a powerful civilian leader. You know, it's one thing to find a job and get a job. It's another thing to keep the job. You know, what you did got you here. What you do now keeps you here. And what we want to do is use this platform, you know, the podcast, to help transitioning vets transition their military style into a civilian style. And it does take some effort, and it'll take a little bit of time, but you just have to embrace the change. One thing that I try to articulate to folks is that the way I transitioned out of the service after 21 years, I mean, literally, think about it. I lived in the service longer than I actually lived with my mom and dad. You know, I mean,
true.
I was born, you know, Brian and I are both twins, so we were born, you know, and age zero, right? 1 month. And we left a month after we turned 18. I said, and then I went into the service with him, and then I stayed 21 years as an adult in the military. And I became a military person and a military leader. That transition out of the military was very difficult. And that's what we're going to try to help you with. You know, one thing in the service is you're a positional leader. And in the, you know, when you lead the service, then you have to work around a lot of that positional stuff that you had in the service. I like to call it your followers in the service followed you because of the UCMJ, but in the civilian world, they can leave you. They don't have to listen to you. Okay? You
that
want them
true.
To listen to you, but they don't have to listen to you. And they can actually report you if you're a bad leader. And so I look at it as UCMJ versus walk away. And if you think about UCMJ versus walk away, that articulates and describes the difference between military leadership and civilian leadership.
That's
so today,
true.
What do you think, Brian?
Is. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's, you know, and the military has to be a leader-follower type of thing, and you're made to follow the leader. But in the real civilian world, you have many opportunities that instead of staying with that unit for 3 or 4 years or longer, you have the opportunity to move whenever you want, whether it's because you dislike the place, dislike the people, you're going for more money or a higher position, you have an opportunity out here in the civilian world to excel. And in order to do that, You have to communicate and connect with people. So, yeah. No, I think it's exactly right. The UCMJ, it is, but it also is it's that you're basically stuck in, regardless of whether you like it or not, you're stuck in the service, and you know, you're signed up for a certain amount of time. After like you had 21 years in, after that, you get out, and all of a sudden, it's all up to you. There's no Department of the Army telling you where to go, when to be there. It's all up to you. So it is
right.
A difficult situation, even when you were in, mm-hmm. you know, four or five years also. It's difficult because a lot of these guys are right out of high school, so it's tough to try to figure it out.
I tell people all the time, I said, remember when you transitioned from a civilian into the military? You know, that's a very difficult transition, but you adapted and overcame. You really have to do that same process just backwards, and you have to do it quick.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And one thing that does help is connecting with people, and this is what this podcast is about. You know, we're going to just kind of go through, you know, John Maxwell's leadership program, but other than the you know, many communicate but very few connect. And we're going to try to relate that to everybody and put it in our own words in the battle, the BRM, the Battlefield
mm-hmm.
Resume Methodology. So,
yep.
Well, let's move on to the you know, first thing is connecting, the connecting principles. And number one is influence. Bruce, what do you think as far as influence, how does that affect military? And then in your situation, how does it affect the influence that you have at your workplace, or you see others that have transitioned out, the influence that they have? Is that something they have to build, or is it something they just learn to do because people aren't made to follow them any longer?
Right. You know, influence, leadership is influence. And, you know, connecting with people is the ability to identify with people and relate to them in such a way that it increases their influence with them. And so, you know, we find a lot of transitioning service members who miss this point. You know, influence, you have to relate to people and try to figure out what motivates them and then help them achieve their goals so you can achieve yours. You know, and John Maxwell talks about the presidential historian Robert Dallek. It says that successful presidents exhibit 5 skills and qualities that enable them to achieve things that others don't. You know, 1 is vision, 2 is pragmatism, 3 is consensus building, 4 is charisma, and 5 is trustworthiness. And so when you take all those together, leadership is literally influence. It's just how do you influence your civilian followers versus how you influence them in the military, you know, your military followers.
Right. That's good. I mean, you have to be – influence is at the top. You have to be a person of influence. People have to trust you. I mean, it goes all involved with that. Whether you realize
mm-hmm.
that you're doing it or not, you know, to become genuinely effective leader, you have to learn how to connect with people. And everyday situations, not just at work, but when you're out of work. And whether you realize it or not, when you're in a military, you were doing that. You were connecting with people, because especially if you transition to another post or another you know, area of the world, you connected with people on a certain level and made friendships and relationships. And that's very, very important in the civilian world.
Yeah, you know, I relate it to, think about when you PCS'd, right? I mean, all of us PCS'd. And we moved from one duty station to the other. You know, and some of that effort in moving. Let's just keep it simple, right? So let's just say you move to one from one duty station to another, and you wanted to try to build some influence with your folks, right? Your soldiers at that time. How did you do it? Well, you know, some of the connecting signals that people have, little extra effort, and it goes a long way. So, for instance, unsolicited appreciation, all right? Say positive things, you know? You have to say
right.
positive things. Unsolicited
right.
appreciation. You know, people love that. And sometimes we miss that, right? Because we're always looking at the bad things. We're always trying to fix something, right? We're always trying to correct something. I mean, how many military people do you hear that say, look, just give me a job. I'll fix whatever you need fixed. Well, look, I don't
right.
need a fixer, right? I need a
right.
a good manager that motivates people and connects with the people. Multiple types of personalities. How do you do that? One way, unsolicited appreciation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's you know, charisma. I'll go down there to number four. There, charisma is so important, and that's one thing that I really strive for myself and let others know, is you have to be enthusiastic. I mean, you got to be the light when you walk into a place. Don't be the negative, be the positive. Have really good charisma. And it's very
you're
important.
Absolutely right.
Very important.
No, it is important. And it is. I tell you, I mean, I've worked job fairs for many years, and a lot of the attendees are very negative, at least when they're at my booth, because maybe I'm one of those that they feel safe with. Right, and
right.
They can talk to me. The fear is in my mind: are they speaking to the representatives of these companies at these job fair events the same way they're speaking to me? Because they have to realize that they need to bring in a positive atmosphere. Right, everything
yeah.
needs to be positive. No one wants to hear about the negativity. Everyone has that in their life. They need
right.
positive people around them.
Yeah, an employer wants positive people.
Mm-hmm.
A negative person will destroy an organization. It'll spread like wildfire. What does it mean to you when you think of vision? Someone that has vision. I really think that that's important for a hiring manager, that someone not only has charisma, but they have the vision to go to that goal, to work towards a vision. If you don't have a vision, I don't know if you know where you're going. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. I think the challenge, I believe, is that in a lot of companies, they aren't expecting their employees to ask about the vision. The military service member, all they know, look, they went in, and there's a couple things that they know that they're going to receive no matter what company they're in, right? What organization they're in, no matter where in the world. They're going to have a mission. They're going to have a vision. They're going to have objectives, milestones, an end state. Where are we headed? Where are we going?
Right.
And in the civilian world, that's not as clear. You know, a lot of the vision statements are very generic. So, that you know, if you hire a vet and a vet goes into an organization, the first thing that I would always ask is, where do you want to take this organization? What can I do to help you do that? And
right.
if the employers understand that and they're ready for it, then they can be prepared, right? But on the flip side, the veteran, as they transition out of the service, they have to realize not all companies have that definitive vision, definitive mission. They may have a mission statement, may have a vision, And at the higher levels, maybe they know the milestones, but it's not as obvious as the military mission statement, objectives, milestones would be.
Right. Well, you know, mm-hmm. talk about the consensus building. You know, as far as the lessons that people learn, I mean, that's so important that I say it in some of the little small podcasts that we have also on at Battlefield Resumes, is that you have to learn from the past. I mean, you don't live in the past, but you have to learn from it and try not to do it the same way and expect different results. You have to change your ways or find a different way or a better way to do something. That's right there, number three as well. But I mean, consensus building is just learning from past experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to bring everybody into the same thought and vision as you, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, some of the you know, the ability to connect with others begins with understanding the value of people. And, you know, you can move from good to great. You know, those who build great companies understand this. You know, those who transition easiest understand this. Is you have to build a consensus among those that you lead. But in order to do that, you have to know them. You know, you have to understand each one individually. You know, what motivates them, what doesn't motivate them. But more, what do they like? What do they dislike? What are they going through in their life right now? And then once you have all that, then you can try to bring them into a consensus, you know, of some vision that you have.
Right. Right. I just kind of keep looking at that word vision too, and I think it's so important. That's probably why it's number one. Is when you think of what you want to do, that underneath vision, there needs to be. That's where you put your goals, and you put short-term goals that you've laid out in order to reach that long-term goal, and that's where the vision comes in. And one thing, the fifth principle there is trustworthiness. As far as building trustworthiness, people want to know how to do certain things. I really believe that trustworthiness, it just comes from your character. It comes from being ethical, being doing things consistently honest, being consistently true, no white lies, no lying to people, not trying to put the wool over your head or anything. It's really being consistently honest with yourself and others. So and it builds trust and it really builds rapport with people. So
yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be trustworthy. And, you know, what's interesting is those who you supervise or work with have to trust you. And, you know, Stephen Covey, wrote The Speed of Trust. You know, you can read about that as well as the John Maxwell books. But trust is a baseline item that you have to have. Not only do you have
right.
to be able to trust the people around you, your coworkers, but they have to trust you. And let's kind of talk about maybe causes people not to be trustworthy, right?
Right.
And you know, one of the things that I've seen in the past is that, let's say you send an email to someone and not the intended participant, but you know, somebody else starts discussing what you wrote in your email. Well,
right.
You know, that's a problem, right? And so who is or who is not trustworthy? You know, there's certain things that we do in life that automatically assumes whether a person's trustworthy.
Right.
And, you know, you have to watch it yourself, but you also have to watch others and assess other people around you.
Well, and that's exactly right. I think, you know, being in the fire service, retiring from the fire service, I think that's a lot of those same lessons are within that organization, police department, and the military time that I spent as well. I think it's all relatively, you know, a group of A-type personalities, and you have some that aren't, but the majority are. But the ones that you trust are the ones that aren't talking bad about somebody behind their back, because as a person of influence, you know that they're going to be talking about you behind their back,
mm-hmm.
Behind your back. You know, it's leadership wise. Instilling trust is not do as I say, not as I do. What's the old saying in the military? Set the example, lead by
mm-hmm.
example. You know, and that gets lost in the civilian world. So if you do that, you know, I've been traveling a lot, and I've told two people in the last 2 weeks that are younger generation folks that aren't in police officer, they're not firefighters, they're not in the military, but they're going to college, and they're one of those that have been delayed. They've taken some night classes, and they're going to college, and they think they're behind the eight ball, and I tell them, I've said this same thing to both of them, and I said, you know, you have something that they don't. You know, that degree doesn't give you work ethic. It doesn't make you come to work or even want to work. It does nothing. It only gets you in the front door. So it's the person. And being trustworthy is just so important to being a positive leader and a positive role model and having influence within your organization.
Well, let's figure out, you know, if you are a transitioning service member, how do you, one, become trustworthy among your coworkers? And let's just assume that, you know, you're not going to be a supervisor or manager. However, you can still be a leader, even if you're not a supervisor or manager. A supervisor, manager, and leader are all separate. And
right.
Distinctly different. And so let's say you exit out of the service and you go into an organization where you are not a manager and not a supervisor. How do you become trustworthy among your coworkers? And then how do you assess your coworkers and their trustworthiness? You know?
Right.
You know, I give an example like way back when I was working in Japan, it's interesting that with the individuals that I was working with, one of the things that they would say is that when you're working with the Japanese, you know when you cross into a higher level of trustworthiness with them, when they start discussing vulnerabilities with you. So, for instance, some of the vulnerabilities
right.
Were family discussions. So, for instance, if I felt comfortable with you to the point where I wanted to discuss things about my family, my kids, my wife, you know, things like that, then that's a certain level of trustworthiness I have with you. I trust you enough to where I feel comfortable with telling you some of the vulnerable areas of my life. Well, flip side of that, too, is, you know, how can you judge when those around you feel like they can trust you? probably
right.
One item is when they can, when you recognize and you identify that they are actually discussing vulnerable topics with you.
That is, mm-hmm. That is true. Because they would not
That's
talk
wonderful.
About their, they may say that they're married or they may say something in general, but they're not going to say too much too soon until they have some form of trust with you. That's
right.
Exactly right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you get to that point? Well, you know, you have to have some charisma, meaning, you know, take the edge off. You're not in the military anymore. You know, you can still get
yep.
your point across. You can still talk, have discussion points, be part of the conversation.
Right.
You know, don't
right.
seclude yourself and think everyone's not as good as you. You have to dig in, adapt to the situation, and become friends with people, discuss
right.
topics with people. Don't have a strong opinion all the time. You know, everyone has strong opinions about everything. Take the edge off a little bit because you're working with civilians at this point.
Right.
And build
right.
that trustworthiness. Yeah. You know, I
yeah.
think that's extremely
yeah,
important.
I think it is too. I think it's very important. And you know, it's what makes, I mean, when most people are disconnecting with others, what's some of those signals as far as disconnecting in an environment? And I'm going to just lay an environment out here. So a guy transitioning out of the military, and I'll use myself for instance, getting off the plane from Germany, landed on the East Coast there, and next thing you know, it's you're done, and you walk off the plane, and now you're civilian. Now it's just it kind of feels like walking out the doors of prison after you've been in there 20 years, and saying, okay, there you go. What are you going to do now? And in today's world, connecting can be as easy as joining certain clubs that you're interested in. You know, if you have professions, you can join those clubs. Now, what you do within those clubs, that's the connecting part. That's
mm-hmm.
you know, people communicate, but how do you connect? And so if I'm in an organization, say if I'm in a club or a little, you can go to meetup.com and find anything that you want, any kind of interest, you can find a club for it. And so say I am a programmer and I'm trying to find a job. Well, the best way to find a job is to build relationships with those that are already in jobs. And so if I'm in a group, they are having a club meeting, and I'm in this group, I can communicate with people, but how do I really connect? How do you do that, and how do you not do it? And, well, I mean, you walk into a place, what would be the first thing that you would do, Bruce?
Well, I will tell you what not to do. That's an easy one. What to do is more difficult.
Right.
What not to do is assume that you're already connected just because you're
true.
In the same location.
Right. Right.
And beg for a job. That's not
Yeah, you
connected.
Don't
want
to beg.
Okay.
No.
You know, as long as you go in, now what are you trying to do? You're trying to make friends. You know, the
right.
the actual discussion about employment should not even come up until maybe 2 or 3, 5 to 10 meetings later. You know, you're friends first. They have to trust
right.
you. Then they'll refer you. They're not going to refer somebody on behalf of their person, right?
No.
On behalf of
How many times has somebody out there referred – How many times has somebody out there referred a relative or a close friend even, and that fell by the wayside? So building strong rapport with people is important
mm-hmm.
if you want to be referred anyplace.
Right.
You know, and first of all, I think that the ways that you you do go into a group, an organization, even like the, I don't know, the Kiwanis Club, the Lions Club, but there's so many other types of organizations, but a group of people like that, one is it takes energy. You have to have energy to do it. It's going to be difficult for you to connect with people if you are with this group and you just sit in the corner and not communicate with anybody. So you have to be genuinely interested. This is a good example, too, of one of the tips that I could tell you. One, you got to have energy in there. And the second thing is you have to try to be kind of ignorant and interested. You don't know any of these people, and your objective is to find out as much about them. And how do we do that? We ask the who, what, why, when, and where whenever we talk to somebody. You ask them questions. The thing that everyone loves to do is talk about themselves, and it just always goes back to that. They always love talking about themselves. And when you go into a room, drink some coffee before you go or whatever, but you got to have a little bit of energy in it in order to speak with people. But you have to have energy in order to listen to people. You just ask
questions.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting you say that, because when I was growing up in the military, that's what I say, obviously, but when I was growing up in the military, I did not think that it was proper to ask people questions, because I thought that was a vulnerable area, obviously. So I felt awkward in asking people questions. So what I would always do is talk about my stuff, and you know, what was conveyed is that I don't care about them, but that's not really what I was intending.
Well, just think about this. You are, you know, the most people that go into the service are right between 18 and 20, probably. And so you go in there at a young age, and you're taught not to ask any questions. Asking questions is very difficult because you're taught not to. You don't ask why. Why are we doing this? You don't even say that, or you're going to be doing push-ups. You don't ask, that doesn't make sense. Why are we doing that? Why are we putting lines in the sand? Turn over rocks so the other side gets sun. It doesn't make any sense. You don't say that stuff because you're doing it because someone said so. But in the real world or in the civilian world, that's how you get to know people. You don't ask questions like that, but you have to ask questions because other people – just think of how much you like talking about yourself if someone would ask you, you know, and well, that's what you have to do. And the more you ask questions, the more they like you. And it's a basic
principle. It's interesting,
Brian.
It's interesting. And exercise that you know, people could practice is, you know, go up to somebody you know, a neighbor, your wife, whatever, and for the duration of that conversation, only ask questions.
Only ask questions.
That's it.
And it's,
only
and
ask
it's
questions about
questions.
Them. Right.
Right. And you know, it does take a little bit of work. It really does, to ask open-ended questions. And as easy as it sounds, it's not as easy to do it, okay? That's why you have to remember the who, what, why, when, and where, and how.
Mm-hmm.
So you ask those questions, starting with those words, and people have to answer in a sentence. They don't answer.
So
yes,
give us
no.
an example, like for instance, for me, you know, I look at the, you know, somebody like myself, you know, saying, hey, you just have to ask questions. Go to your wife, and well, that's probably not a good one because you never want to do this kind of practice on your spouse because they know what you're up to. But
No. That's,
you know,
that's actually, you could do it on your spouse. They won't even know.
You know, but you basically don't want to interrogate people, right? That's not the questions that I'm saying, right? I mean, I don't want to say, hey,
you
when were you there?
That.
Why were you there? Who were you there with?
No.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
No.
Give us
you
an example of yours.
Mm-hmm. Okay? You don't go that direction, okay? You go more to the heart, okay? If you say, why were you there, when were you there, how were you there, who did you do there, you know, whatever, you it's that's outside of the body. Okay, so mentally you got to think inside the body, and I always say go for the heart. Okay, so say you're talking to a spouse, you know, I say that you're eating dinner, or you will notice such a big turnaround if you write down this the who, what, why, when, where, and how, and say something to the similar like, first of all, be genuinely interested in how her day was. That takes a lot of energy. So be genuinely interested. And then when she says that, ask her a question about the business that she's in. So say for instance, my wife is coming home from an instructor, a class at one of the colleges. And so she's coming home and she's asking me, which I've heard this a lot, and so it's like blah, blah, blah in my ears. And I say that, and she wouldn't take offense to it because you've been married so doggone long, you know. So, but this is part of the success of being married too, is building long-term relationships, and that's what we're talking about as far as connecting. Is say she comes home, you have to be genuinely interested and say something like, you know, when she says, "Yeah, I had problems with the kid," and says, and say, "Well, what were they saying?" What were the problems? How, you know, were they handling that? What did you do for that? And you keep asking questions like that, and it just brings more questions off the top of your head. You know, I gave this homework, right? Let's use a job, for instance. To say, let's say I'm wanting to get a job, and let's use this programmer club that I was just talking about. You walk in this club, and you know, you got a lot of different people, and they're talking to each other. And you go up to somebody, you know, the first thing is you just say, you know, "Hey, how are you doing?" And again, "How are you doing?" And then, "Oh, fine." Is it? So, by the way, we're in that phrase right there, "by the way." That's another outlet. It's just another little tip to use that you can ask a question without it feeling awkward. "By the way, where do you guys work at?" And so they'll say, "Oh, I work at Hidden." "Well, what do you do there?" And so I'm playing dumb to a certain degree. So I'm like, what do you do there?" And, we do, you know, this. So it may be, maybe it's some kind of app for a phone. "Oh man, that's cool. That is so cool that, you know, it's how many phones are out there that need that type of, you know, programming and this and that. How long have you been doing that? You know, where did you get the education to do it at?" "I went to such and such university." "Oh, that's great. You know, I knew a person that was over there. Do you remember this place?" It just keeps spawning, and the asking questions, you're going to build rapport so fast if you just think that way and genuinely talk to their heart, not to outside of their body.
Let's take this for example. If you've sold insurance and opened up new offices, new locations, new clients. When you would go into obviously an unfamiliar firehouse, right?
Right.
I mean, that's you don't belong in there. They don't know you. You don't know them. How do you connect with them? You know, maybe it takes a period of time, right, obviously. But what's the first time? What do you do? What's the objective, right?
You know, the objective is to make a friend. Is to make a really quick acquaintance. You have first impressions have to be good, so you got to be, you know, together. You can't be a rag bag, and you don't want to sell them on anything. Okay, so that's probably the number one thing, because if you were going to a campfire. And you invited some neighbors over, and some of those neighbors you didn't even know. You wouldn't try to sell them wood at the campfire. You wouldn't try to sell them a chair. You're going to try to, you're just building friendships,
right?
How you have to go into these things. You can't, even though you're trying to either sell your product or whether you're trying to sell yourself, you have to go in genuinely wanting to know about these folks. Today is a great example. You know, I go into a police department and had no idea of what I'm going into, and you build rapport by being calm, confident, asking questions, and then genuinely caring about their members and themselves without selling anything, because that's not the goal. Walking out with a sale is not the goal that day. It will happen eventually because they trust you and they like you. They're going to ask you about it. But the first thing, you really have to build rapport up. And that's, going into
place
is the first thing.
It's interesting. I like going through the John Maxwell thing where it says, there's a few items here on the slideshow. Unsolicited appreciation.
Right.
Say positive things. Right.
Yeah.
Unguarded openness. You must demonstrate trust,
right.
You're open. Communication. Express yourself readily. You have to be able to express yourself. You have to be open, honest, appreciative, communicate.
Right.
You have to be willing to communicate and have a desire to communicate. Enjoyable experiences. You have to feel good about what they are doing. Okay,
that's
so
exactly
when
right.
When you ask questions, like whatever questions they are, and they bring up a topic in that conversation, hey, I can't talk right now. I have to go pick up my kids from school. Now, be genuine, feel good about that topic, and ask them about that topic of their children. Right? What school are they in? Sports? Those topics and then share experiences, the emotional bondedness, right? Display a connection on an emotional level. You know, so for instance, I can remember going into location. I would talk to someone and I would leave and I was like, man, I think I spoke more than they did. I didn't really know what to say. Well, the thing is when you learn how to do this John Maxwell, everyone communicates if you connect, then you actually have the synergy. It's effective, and it's an emotional tie you have with the person. You actually care. The impression that they have on you is that you care about them, and
that's exactly
you want.
Right.
Right? You want that shared
exactly
bondedness.
Right.
And so, for instance, you can practice it anywhere. I'm standing next to somebody at McDonald's, and I start a conversation with them as far as, whatever the topics are. Like you go into Arby's, and they have the bell that rings as you depart the location, right?
Right.
If you got good service, you ring the bell, right? Well, I think that's kind of backwards. I think you should ring the bell expecting good service when you go in. Right, so when I go into Arby's, I ring the bell because I expect good service. Okay, everyone behind the counter is shocked. All right, I mean, why would I wait until after I get served whether or not to decide to ring the bell or not? So when I go in, I ring the bell, and then guess what that does? It initiates conversation.
It does.
And so now I discuss and I talk to people, and whatever topic they surface, then I'll try to identify with, and I'll ask them about it. You know, the John Maxwell certification program actually does they do a great job relating this, is they call it the microphone. When you're talking to someone and you ask them a question, hey, I haven't seen you in a couple weeks, I hope everything was okay, and they talk about, let's say, their vacation. oh, you know, I went on vacation to the Bahamas. And what is the normal reply? The normal reply is you start talking about how great your vacation was. And then
that is exactly right.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I went to the Bahamas, and I went. I, you know, I didn't like it as much as this. But when we, you know, you have a half hour of your vacation. Well, what you just did was take the mic away from them. You took the microphone away from them.
Right.
You have to give the microphone back to them. You know, try not
yes.
to take the microphone away. So if you've asked them, if they've said something about their vacation, then be interested in their vacation. Let them have the microphone. You know,
right.
I use this as an analogy too. You know, an example. Let's say somebody brings up their habit. Hey, what'd you do this week? Oh, it was a great weekend. My daughter had a baby this weekend. Oh, congratulations. Boy or girl? Oh, she had a girl. Oh, you know, my daughter had two girls. They were twins. They grew up. They became pilots and doctors. And this, guess what I just did? I took the microphone away from them.
You took it away.
Yeah, you know, it was.
You did.
It was a great weekend that they had. We almost could have had emotional tie there because we had similar experiences. But I took the microphone away from them, and I told
right.
them how good I had
well,
it better
I,
than them.
And yeah, and I, you know what? This topic right here is so important to understand because it is very common. People don't realize that they do this. They don't. They don't realize they do it, and some of them won't even admit that they did it. So, and it's just connecting. You're communicating.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling them how good your vacation was. You're not connecting. Okay.
Right.
And that is exactly right. You have to be interested in other people. That's if you're not interested in other people, there's nothing that we can do for you. You have
right.
to learn to be interested in other people. If you're not, you
mm-hmm.
have to at least learn it. And so, but asking people, you're exactly right. When a person goes on, I just was eating dinner this evening and a guy was talking and about how all the kids came to school Halloween, this, that, and the other. So they came to school all rambunctious and dead in the morning and rambunctious in the afternoon. And I said, so are you a teacher? He said, yeah. I said, oh, okay. Now I'm going through the who, what, why, when, where. You know, what school, how long you been teaching? Where at? What grade? And so you can relate. You've already went through school. You can relate to him. That's a commonality right there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that if you go into some place, say an interview or say, I'll use an interview for or a presentation. You go into somebody's office. The first thing you do, if you're not aware of this, the first thing you do is while you're going to shake his hand, somehow, his or her hand, somehow you scan the room and see if there's something common there. And you don't have to say it right now, but you just, while you're sitting there, you try to ask questions. Even in an interview, they want you talking. And you believe it or not, they want you talking, but what happens is you'll answer them and maybe you'll ask them another question. You'll build up a relationship within a half hour interview and they'll hire you because they like you. You may not be the best candidate, but you've let them have the microphone. And now they've spent a half hour talking about themselves and probably very little talking about you.
Right.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
You know, it's,
if you can get
it's really interesting. One of the things in the John Maxwell book is that Jerry Hall of the consulting firm Telemetrics studied the performance of 16,000 executives and found a direct correlation between achievement and the ability to care for and connect with people. Okay, and so high achievers. There were four items of high achievers. They cared about people as well as the profits.
Yeah.
They viewed subordinates optimistically. They sought advice, meaning they asked questions, right? They sought advice
yep.
from people under them. which is important.
Right.
And then they were listeners. And so it's very interesting, you know, when we take all this into account and we look at what we're talking about is how do you connect with someone on an emotional level? All
right,
so right. My recommendation is don't take the microphone away from them. And if you're talking to someone, and I like the school teacher that you were just talking about, because it's a lot of topics within that conversation. Find somebody like the school teacher, you know, something like that. What are the emotional questions that you should be asking that you're not going to take the microphone away from them, but you're conveying that you care about them and you want to
know more about
them.
Right.
You know, why did you go to school? What made you become a teacher?
Well, and you feel for them, just like this guy, this particular person I knew. You know, I know now I'll never meet him again, probably. It was just one of the kind of a passerby type of person. But I knew that he taught sixth graders at a middle school. Well, as soon as you say middle school and sixth graders, especially the word middle school, you know he's in for a lot of challenges. You just know that because they're transitioning from kids into teenagers. So, so junior high is very challenging for teachers. And having a little empathy for him and going, oh, man, how in the world do you do that? You know, again, the word how. How have you done that, or how many years have you done, you know, been a teacher? How do you handle the kids when they get like they were today? You know,
yeah.
And so it's very good. It's asking questions, and, man, it's the best way. But you, again.
Sure.
You got to care for them. You got to care.
Yeah. With all of those issues during the day in school, what makes you stay there as a teacher? What is it about that job that you would love to do? Now you're getting into the heart of the person.
That's exactly right. And the connecting questions are, you know, they're thinking to themselves, does he care for me? Can you help me, and can I trust you? You know, do you care? And so you genuinely have to care when you ask the question. You don't just ask it just to be asking it. Your feeling is I may not be able to help you, but I'm there with you because that's got to be one heck of a job. And then
you're listening.
We're talking. Mm-hmm. You're listening.
Yeah,
no, it's powerful.
You're listening. You're on an emotional level, and like we said before, earlier in the podcast, how do you know when the individual you're speaking to, just like this teacher, feels some comfort level with you to a point in which they're willing to trust you on a certain level, right?
Right.
Well, once they start describing their vulnerabilities.
You know, in the more confident that you become with asking questions and listening, the more you realize it doesn't take as long. You know, the better you get, the less time it takes. We got about 5 minutes left in our podcast here. And just for example, you know, I'm delivering a line of duty death benefit check to an officer, to an officer's benevolent fund, and because he was killed from a gunshot by an 18-year-old. And so I'm delivering that today. And at the same time, I know this department they're not even aware that there's protection out there for them. And so you're riding a fine line of using this incident to sell a product. That's horrible. So don't do it. And that's what I did today. I didn't do it. I just go in there, genuinely lay this down there, couple ladies today, you build rapport saying, you know, it's your membership needs to know these things are out there. They need to know it. Somehow or another, we have to spread the word that this is out there for them. They're eligible for it. And whether they, you know, it doesn't matter whether they use it or not. They just need to know it's out there. And being genuinely concerned, especially with the way the world is right now, being genuinely concerned about them and their members, they called three people at three different times in to talk to me today, which was a win for me. Not that I didn't sell anything. It's just I'm there wanting to know their issues and their problems and how you can find a solution to the problems they have. And it's but the rapport was built really, really quick when you talk about that, probably in less than an hour, was really quick to the point where they're telling other officers that have influence within their organization and the county organization, specific officers to come in so they can spread this availability to the whole membership. And that's all you can ask. It's, you're just, they have to trust you in order to do anything with you. So it's the connecting is so important. It really is.
No, it's great. And good examples too. I mean, just so everyone, you know, and if they haven't read your bio, Brian sells life insurance for policemen and firemen, and you know, helps us with battlefield resumes. I mean, he's transitioned from the service into this as a regional manager now, and can definitely help translate the leadership styles and how to connect. You know, one of the things too, just to end this, connecting is the ability to identify with people and relate to them in such a way that it increases our influence with them. So leadership is influence, and, you know, we have to get on that emotional tie. So, you know, my only advice to people is think about it as a microphone. Don't take the microphone away. Genuinely care about someone. And then ask them genuine questions, you know, that get into the heart of why they're actually doing what they're doing, and then be appreciative into that, and you'll see this bond develop. Don't talk about the employment. Don't talk about your requirements and, you know, your lack thereof or whatever. Be genuinely interested in those folks and leverage that in the future. You know, you have time. Everyone's got the same amount of time. That's how you would connect, and it's a lifelong process, but, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah. Hey, that's great. That's great. And be sure to catch the next podcast, and we'll do the next part of this, you know, people communicate but few connect. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, check out our on-demand.
Thank you for listening today.
There, so
please visit us at battlefieldresumes.com and find out how to build the business of you. Give us some feedback on topics that you'd like to know about. And remember, most of all, make today count.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.